Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan. I have Mikey and John joining me right now. We have a good interview with Nick Allegretti coming up here shortly, but we wanted to touch on basketball a little bit. Obviously, the basketball team's been playing really well as of late, of winners of six straight, and a top five team in the country right now. They had a great game against Northwestern. Great, I say great because they came out with the W, and it wasn't necessarily the prettiest of wins, but what'd you guys see a couple nights ago there with Northwestern coming to Champaign?
I mean, obviously, you know, the first few minutes of the game, you know, I was watching it with my dad. I'm like, oh, I looked at him. I was like, Northwestern's terrible. And I kind of like laughed. And then, you know, come second half, it's like a 1-point game. I'm like, oh, shoot. Like, I jinxed us. I shouldn't have said that. So, I mean, obviously, Dan, like you mentioned, good to come out with the win. But you'd like to see the guys, you know, have the pedal pushed down for the entire 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think it's not concerning per se, but you don't want to have, you know, a game go to OT against a Nebraska or even Indiana, and you don't want it to get to a 1-point game when you're blowing out Northwestern. It's one of those where how many times can you rely on that? Hopefully they can just keep doing it because they have the best closer. Like, that's so wild that we just have that. Like, we have one of the best players in the country. We also, it's just like so hard to appreciate because I'm not used to it, at least. Just being like, oh yeah, like we have a guy out there who can do whatever he wants whenever he wants. Like, and he does it a lot in the last 2 minutes of the game. Like, that is something that hopefully we can keep appreciating. And I was actually thinking a little bit today because I was seeing like a bunch of compilations of, you know, IO last minute shots type stuff. And I was thinking like, man, yeah, and because it was also including last year's. I was thinking like, man, that really sucks that we got last year taken away from us. Cause that team, like, I don't know, that will be a debate in like 5 to 10 years if we make a deep run, but it'll be like the well actually of, well, if there was no such thing as COVID, the, you know, 2019 team, 2020 team could have been a lot better. It's like, all right, well, but I'm still just like obviously trying to appreciate what we have right now, but it's awesome to have, you know, two of the top 10 players in the country, like, easily. Like, that just doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah, for so many years it felt like Illinois was the king of going down early and, you know, being down 15-20 points and then making a miraculous comeback, getting it really close, and then ultimately, you know, losing at the end, giving back a few points late, and then ending up losing the game. But it seems like this team is the king of playing to the opponent's level. So they might go up big early, like we saw against Northwestern. And then for whatever reason, there's just something about them where they kind of, I don't know if they ease off the gas, or if the other teams, you know, everyone's gone in for Illinois because Illinois is a top team now and everyone's, you know, playing their hardest basketball against the Illini. But for whatever reason, the opponents tend to find a way back into the game. And frankly, they're opponents that Illinois is favored to blow out of the water. So I'm trying to wrap my head around what's wrong with this team, in the sense that, you know, they can't just put a team away early. It seems like they always let them linger, and at the end of the day they are able to get the job done, and that's really all that matters. So, you know, maybe I'm looking into it a little too deeply, but for me, I'm like, I want to see them just bury teams, and they haven't really done that yet.
Yeah, I mean, the one positive thing I think we should, you know, take out of this is that the team is getting experience, you know, playing tight games close, you know, with under 2 minutes, like 1-2 score ball games. And that's going to, you know, pay off come March when you are going up against a team that's deeper on the roster than a Northwestern or a Nebraska. So it's good to get some of those reps in, but you definitely would, you know, want to put them away early like we have, but then, you know, don't let them claw back into it like they have.
Yeah, it'll definitely be one of those where, looking back, we'll kind of be able to say like, oh, it was just the Big Ten was one of the toughest conferences ever this year. And of course, you're going to get everyone's best shot as a top 10 team or a team that never fell out of the top 25. Like, of course, that was going to happen. But it could also be like Dan, you were saying, like you just never really saw them have that killer instinct from, you know, the tip to the final horn. And that could be one of those that comes back to bite them in the ass.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the Big Ten, too, which I'm hoping as we get to the NCAA tournament, is that we've been tested by all these top-tier teams. The Big Ten's kind of the clear-cut best conference in college basketball this season. We've We've played Michigan, or we're going to play Michigan if they decide they are ready for us. We beat Iowa. You know, we played a tough game against Ohio State. Wisconsin's a good team. Rutgers is a good team. Indiana's a good team. There's a lot of really good teams in the Big Ten. So I'm hoping by the time we get to the NCAA tournament, we've had so many tests and, you know, have played close games, like you said, that we're ready to go and you know, play against teams that haven't quite been in those situations yet and should give us an advantage.
For sure. And we have, you know, the best player in the country.
That's right.
On our team. So you never feel like you're ever out of it. And Kofi, I mean, he's beast. I think he's second in the country in double-doubles, and he looks night and day compared to last year, in my opinion. I know he was really good last year, but this year he just looks a lot more fluid, a lot more comfortable. And having that tandem, you know, there's no reason why we, you know, couldn't win it all this year, in my opinion.
You arguably have, you know, the best two players on the court every night. And at the very least, you have two of the top three players on the court every night. So that's always a huge advantage in college basketball, where talent seems to win out a lot of the time.
Yeah, that the Kofi development has been unreal. Because I get what you're saying, Mikey. Like, he kind of last year was more so a big body than he was a basketball player at times. And now this year, it seems like he's kind of coupling that. And like, he's looks so much more athletic. Like, even just his his movements, they're not so robotic, or like, he's throwing down dunks with ease because he's now like maybe just more aware of his surroundings. I don't really know, but he just looks so much better. And maybe it's he kind of got a kick in the butt in terms of, you know, having to come back to U of I and maybe not getting the feedback he wanted from, you know, NBA scouts or whatever. And he's like, all right, well, I need to change this, that, and the other thing. But it looks like he's done it, because, man, he, even like him catching passes, and I don't know, man. That's been a great development, because he's looking real nice, and that's nice to have like your 7 foot, 280 pound like freak who can just take care of anything.
Exactly.
Engaged.
All those juggling drills pregame are paying off for those Kofi hands, that he seemed to have the Nana Egwu disease of dropping a lot of passes last year and even the early parts of this year. But he's really coming to his own recently, like you said. And I, even throughout the season, I've seen a noticeable difference from where he was at the beginning of the year. Like you said, he's more fluid. I'm seeing him make drop steps and, you know, go to the left every now and again, or he's starting to hit some of those turnaround hook shots that he missed in
the
past.
He's attempting jumpers.
That's right. He even steps
out. He's not making all of them, but he's attempting jump shots.
His free throw percentage is where it is, what, 57-58%, somewhere in there. So
weird that he's regressed on that.
Yeah,
so weird.
He was shooting okay at the beginning of the year. It's not the prettiest of shots, but you looked at his free throw percentage about halfway through the year, he was sitting in like the low 60s, which is respectable for a 7 foot, 280 whatever pound guy. But, you know, when you're drop step dunking and ones everywhere and getting monster offensive boards and stuff, It's hard to complain with the play we've seen out of Mr. Coburn.
Hard agree. Andre Curbelo is kind of having a little skid. That's one of those where it might be good for him to come out of it.
Yeah.
I want to bring up a question about Curbelo. Dan, I know he's your boy. You were showing me clips of him in high school. The more I watch him, you know, everyone talks about, you know, freshman, he'll learn. Is this just his game? Like, is those bad turnovers and all, do you guys think that'll eventually work out of his game? Because to me, it seems like what's his biggest strength is also his biggest weakness. And I don't know if, you know, you could take that big strength out, or excuse me, big weakness out, and not have the strength that he does with some of those crazy passes.
Yeah, I'll say this about Andre Curbelo. I think he's got some of the highest basketball IQ I've seen. And, you know, he's as fast as they come. He's pretty smooth. Now, for a kid like him, because of his style of play in high school, he could get away with a lot of things. And I think what we've seen from him is an adjustment this year. And we're seeing the kind of the skid, like John said, where he's just trying to adjust to the speed of the game and figure out what he can and can't do. I don't think that's going to hinder him in the long run. I think he'll make those adjustments and he'll step up his game and, you know, protect the ball a little better and make better decisions. But like, from a sheer talent perspective, I see, you know, a lot of things with him that are tantalizing and will make him a good player in the long run with his vision and his high IQ. So I'm not too concerned. This is just this kid, you know, a lot of freshman experience, these rough patches. So, you know, like you said, you get some good with the bad, but with a kid like him, it's hard to fault him as a freshman going in there and in Big Ten, a good conference, and expecting too much out of him.
Yeah, I think it's kind of going to just be maturity and experience that helps right his ship. I think it's good that he's not getting it out of his system now, but I think it'll allow him in future years to kind of have like a filter, not so much that he needs to take away that part of his game. Cause Mikey, I agree. Like if you take away that aggression or that flair that he has, then, you know, he's not like this unreal shooter. So it's not like he's some guy who's just going to be able to bank on that as like a backup if he's not, you know, distributing at an elite level. So it's one of those where I think with him, if he kind of, through like experiences like this where he's going through a skid his freshman year, he's like, all right, now I know that I either can't make that pass or I just don't need to make it now, or I don't need to force, you know, the shot in the lane, or I don't need to try and make some kind of no look pass to the opposite wing when I can just swing it. Like those are things that hopefully because Dan, you were saying he's got such high basketball IQ and he seems like a pretty aware dude in general, that he'll just be able to adjust over time. And yeah, it is kind of not concerning, but it seemed like initially when he was playing this year, it was like, all right, he's just making mistakes at, you know, 110 miles per hour. And that's just going to happen as a freshman. And now you're kind of like, well, you'd think that he would get settled in at this point in the season. You should see less mistakes. It's probably just a byproduct of him now gaining that confidence and thinking he can get away with more. And then just having to build in that filter of, okay, I know what I can and can't do against Big Ten defenders. So that's at least my theory.
And I'll add too that, you know, the Illini have a pretty good stable of guards. So when you're trying to fight for playing time and prove yourself, a lot of times you force things that you might not typically when you're limited in your minutes. So a lot of times too, when he's relieving Io and Trent and some of those guys and he comes in for a few minutes, I'm sure he's trying to prove himself and show that he can contribute to the team, and sometimes finds himself forcing or trying to, you know, do too much and ends up making a bad decision that costs a turnover. But then, you know, he might come down to the other end and split a double team and no look pass, you know, as long as he's not doing that jump pass underneath the hoop where it seems like the defenses have scouted that now and are staying home. But, you know, I find that he typically makes up for it with some of the positive plays. It's just, you know, he has his high highs and his low lows right now. So,
yeah, and you're probably right, because he was literally billed as like the spark guy. People were like, oh, he should start. And then it was a counterpoint of, oh, well, now it's, he's like the guy who comes in and writes the ship when they get off to a slow start. So maybe he feels like not even for minutes, but that he just has to force it anyway.
I'll acknowledge this, as much as I love Andre Curbelo and Georgie, I feel like if you're a fan of a team that in the Big Ten that isn't the Illini, those are two guys that you're like, man, I can't stand these guys. Georgie's always talking. He's got his hand up. Curbelo's, you know, makes three or four turnovers and then comes down and does like one nice no look pass and then gives the goggles and is, you know, yeah, he's always celebrating and stuff. So the Illini team likes to talk a little bit, and I'm sure, you know, as an Illini fan, we love it. But if you're a fan of a different team, I was thinking about that the other day. I'm like, man, I don't think I'd like this team or Curbelo and Georgie, just how much chirping they do.
And Demonte Williams, sneaky, always looking for a fight.
Yeah, he's always ready to square up too.
The bodyguard.
So yeah, the Illini have been looking pretty good. A couple big road tests coming up. We'll see if Michigan decides that they're ready to play.
I want that game so badly. I don't even care that we looked bad against Nebraska. Like, you can't say like, oh, because they look sluggish against Nebraska, they would have done the same thing against Michigan. Like, no, it's completely different because it's the worst team in the Big Ten versus the top team in the Big Ten. So you would have a completely different like feeling going into the game. But yeah, that's one of those. I want that so badly for like the Big Ten title on the line in the regular season. I need it, and hopefully they're not cowards and they somehow find a way to schedule us.
Yeah, we'll see. Michigan's got a tough road ahead. So if they, you know, if a couple Big Ten teams can knock them off and drop them a few spots, Illinois plays Ohio State, I think, in the last game of the year, and that could end up being for the title as well. So a lot of road games ahead, some big tests for the Illini, but we'll see if they can continue the momentum.
Well, it seems like we've had enough basketball talk for the day, so we should probably throw it over to our little more football-centric and coin-centric interview with one Nick Allegretti.
All right. We now welcome on a very special guest, former Illini Super Bowl champion, and one of Mikey Dudek's best friends, Nick Allegretti. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. Appreciate you guys having me on.
So I'll kick it off with this. You know, you're fresh off the Super Bowl. Have you just been sitting in a recliner and relaxing post-game this past week, or what have you been up to?
Yeah, you know, first couple days, relaxed with some of the teammates, had a couple drinks, you know, just regardless, still a good season, so not happy with the ending, but celebrate the season nonetheless. So it was fun there, and then, yeah, no, I've packed up everything pretty much too, so I didn't save much besides my pajamas, so I've been sitting in my pajama pants for about a week, sitting in one of those anti-gravity type recliners, watched a bunch of Netflix, read a couple books, but that's about it. Haven't moved much.
Nice. Nick, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'm going to hit you with a hard-hitting question right off the bat.
All righty.
This last year, you know, more special teams reps. This year, you get thrown into the starting role. Early on in the season, obviously, personally and as a team, you guys had a great year. What's it like going into the huddle and Patrick Mahomes, the face of football right now, is calling the plays? Is that pretty cool?
It I mean, like, looking at it, like, when you back up, it's wild. I mean, let alone, yeah, obviously Pat's the star of the NFL right now, but the guys around us still, I mean,
right.
Tyreek Hill's probably the fastest player to ever play in the NFL. Travis Kelce is just, I mean, I don't know how to explain him. Just makes any play you ask him to make. I mean, adding Le'Veon Bell mid-season, and a guy, you know, potential, he was a, you know, top three MVP candidate a couple seasons ago, and then he joins the team mid-year. So it's pretty wild. Just, I mean, you know, Brett Veach has done an incredible job bringing that type of talent in. So it's wild. I mean, Pat does a really good job in the huddle. But, yeah, it is weird. Like, sometimes you don't hear the play. And, like,
it's pretty nerve-wracking.
Like, yeah, you know, you got to, like, yell back. Like, what the fuck's the play? Sorry. Whoops.
That'll be a beep.
Get me too comfortable to do that guy here. But, you know, and it's like, man, that's, you know, that's the highest paid athlete in, you know, the U.S. sports history. Maybe world. I don't know exactly, but like, damn, it's pretty fun. I enjoy it.
Do you feel like you have a more important job than the Secret Service protecting a high profile guy like that?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of pressure there, you know, try not to let that get to you, but you know, Chiefs Kingdom, Chiefs Nation, they want to take care of Pat. So, you know, we catch some, you know, some comments here and there if it's not a great week, because they're like, hey, got a $500 million quarterback, we got to protect him. So we got great fans, but yeah, they care about him, we care about him a lot, and yeah, it's a little bit of a pressure.
I was gonna say, I think we can let Nick Allegretti get away with swearing a little bit on the podcast. I don't know if necessarily Dan and I should be out here dropping f-bombs, but I think it's all good.
Yeah, my bad. I'll try to keep
you're good.
I want to take you back. So before you ended up starting, week two against the Chargers, you're almost like the most infamous man in the world.
I just saw that on Instagram today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I was doing my bit of research, and there may be someone on this podcast who had the Chiefs minus two or something like that. And so when I see you get that false start, I'm not only like, oh, come on, Nicky, like, you can't be doing that. But I'm like, all right, Harrison Butker, because there was a timeout called, and he kicked after that. And then, you know, someone just happened to move before the snap. And then he kicked that after that too. I'm like, there's no way this dude is putting a 58 yarder after kicking two bombs that went through already. Like, there's just no way.
No, that was brutal. Cause I mean, I know, Butker's a phenomenal kicker. So I felt good because of who was kicking the ball. But at that moment, it was like, oh my, I couldn't believe it. I was like, I'm getting cut. Like, this is it. It's fun. Looking for a new team. I mean, with the win, you know, you get the, like, you get a little bit of a chuckle from the coach. Like, man, Nick, what were you doing? And it's like, that's a lot different if that kick doesn't go in. So
I was going to say, I know you're not making that that big time, you know, second contract dollars yet, but did you get him anything nice in terms of like, hey man, thanks for saving
my ass? Yeah, I sent some steaks. We got a local KC steak company that I sent them over some steaks. He's a big, big health guy. Eats a lot of just meat and carbs, so I sent him some steaks, hoping he'd enjoy that.
It's similar to my diet, right?
Yeah, cheese pizzas.
Yep.
Cheese pizza and square pasta. But yeah, I'm glad we got past that. I saw that today, though, and I was like, man, I listened to the announcer call out my name, too. Like, that's brutal.
It's a lot better being on the other end when it's Tony Romo singing your praises, yeah, though, right?
Yeah, that's fun. That, you know, that doesn't really happen often. Don't expect it, honestly, to ever happen. So pretty cool when you get a little bit of a highlight for a lineman. Doesn't happen a lot. So that was fun.
You were discussing Mikey's eating habits and like quick veering away from NFL things. What's I'm pretty sure, Mikey, correct me, but you guys live together, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
What is like the most embarrassing thing about Mikey Dudek that you can say on the podcast that most people would not know?
Son
about?
Of a gun.
Oh God.
Got to put you on the spot.
There's first a lot. 10 things are going to be banned from the podcast. So. give me a second on that. We'll hit that again later. If something.
All right. Yeah, I'll let that simmer.
All right. I'll bring it back to the NFL talk. Obviously, you know, global pandemic this year. How wild was it for you guys? I know you and I talked after the season, and you're like, I'm so excited just to go out to eat. You know, how much of a commitment was it, not only to make sure you stay safe, but knowing that if you go out, you risk the whole team not being able to play.
Yeah, I mean, that was, I mean, you know who I'm a warrior as in general. So that added on with this made it tough because, I mean, you want to see your family, you want to see them all, but it's like we were having them get tested before they came to the game, still keeping distance after the game, like in the parking lot, not really coming over to the apartment. If they did, we sat out on the patio while it was still warm. So that was tough because, I mean, it happened. We had guys that usually a spouse or a child got sick, gave it to the husband. Well, I mean, it's hard. There's kids still going to school. It really wasn't much we could do in terms of that. And, yeah, I mean, knocked some guys out. You know, Anthony Sherman lost. He, you know, I think he had a good streak going in terms of games played and lost it because of COVID, and that sucked. So that was wild. I mean, it was wild playing in empty stadiums.
Yeah, did they buzz in, like, crowd noise, or how is that?
Sometimes, so we played the first game. We had fans all year, which is good, but, like, the first, the L.A. game, which was all, I mean, literally in SoFi Stadium, brand new, I mean, beautiful stadium, and it was, they kind of piped in some noise, but, like, the noise you hear on TV was, like, just added to the TV. That's not from the stadium. So it was really weird. I mean, it felt like the spring ball game, kind of.
Right,
that's what I was gonna say. Scattered fans.
Like little cheers. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the first couple games when there was, like, Baltimore, there was, like, nobody besides, like, the two owner's boxes. So, like, you would literally hear, like, our owner's daughter and wife, like, that's it, yelling when we would do well from, like, remember when Coach Rod, you'd hear Coach Rod in the box?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what it was. It was weird.
So, and is there more trash talk going on now?
Honestly, I mean, there was a ton of trash talk this year. I don't know why. Maybe because there was less noise, so everyone could hear everything better.
Mm-hmm.
We had a couple fun ones. Raiders was fun. Saints was fun. Saints was the longest game I ever played in my life. We had 107 snaps.
Wow.
With field goal, but still, that was brutal. But There was definitely some good chippy times.
See, maybe it has something to do with the fact that you were defending champs coming into the season, that you get a few more chirpers.
That brought a lot of – that was tough. We got – every single week we got unscouted looks. We got a lot of – everyone's best shot. So that added a little bit of an extra element, something we still got in the past because we still had Pat last year and the year before. But now that everyone knew him, knew what it takes, we were getting some crazy stuff. But –
Now that you've had a couple seasons in the NFL, what's the transition like, from college to the NFL? And is it more difficult than going from high school to college, or is the college to NFL transition more difficult?
I'd say they're very different, because the high school to college transition is different for everybody because there's a lot of different maturity levels you're dealing with there. On a general basis, everyone's matured going from college to the NFL. There are some really young guys that do mature more, but so that was different for sure. But I think kind of just the lifestyle, you're becoming an adult in college. I mean, food was made for us. We got scholarship checks. We showed up. Here's your schedule. Everything was planned out to the T with us. Here in the NFL, you actually get more free time than you do in college because you have all the classes, you have all that. So it's a little bit more, you know, strenuous than college football, but without the class. So I think kind of realizing like how to be an adult and pay bills, pay rent, do all of that stuff. Like first time you're making money, dealing with that, dealing with family and friends that want to reach out and want to come to the game, you miss them. It's like there's just some aspects that like I didn't prepare for, because I mean this season I saw my brother like twice. Shoot, I haven't seen Dudek and Crouch in a year. So like there's those aspects that like it's work now. You know, it's no longer high school to college as a sport, and then it just becomes your profession. And that was the biggest thing. I remember, like, you know, Dudek was like, hey, we're going to the stadium. You know, we're going to whatever for football. And a lot of guys, when I got there, I heard like, oh, we're going to work, or like when I leave work. And it was confusing to me to hear them call it work. Right. And I realized like, oh, it's work. That's all it is. It's a job. So.
And you touched on a little bit how college is a little more structured out in terms of, you know, we had apps that we used where literally our schedule would get sent to us. If we weren't there, someone would text mm-hmm. us and say, get your ass here. You know, almost holding your hand, wanting you to succeed. It's not like that in the NFL. I'm sure there is some accountability to it, but it's a business where realistically, you know, if you miss a workout or practice because your alarm didn't go off, like you could get cut.
Exactly. So it's like they're not putting in the time and effort to make sure you're there on time. Mm-hmm. We clarify it in all of our team meetings when it starts, but it's like, you know, when it starts, be there on time. Mm-hmm. You know, and with the cool thing with lifting, it was like we got two lifts in a week mandatory, and it was get them in between Monday and Thursday. So there's a little bit more freedom, and then like just a little bit more on yourself to like know when the schedule is, know when meetings are. Meetings start at different times each day. Mm-hmm. Driving yourself to the airport, just like other little things that in college they get rid of that. You bus mm-hmm. to the airport so nobody can get in an accident, nobody can get a ticket on the way there, and then you just kind of the holding the hand's gone. So I love that. I mean, coaching was kind of that way. Mm-hmm. Got rid of a lot of the hand holding for the guys that were able to. And that was, it's kind of like that. I mean, I like it. I don't want to be bussed everywhere Correct. And controlled, you know.
So what do you find yourself doing in like your free time? I know another of your old lineman brethren, Kyle Long, he'll like stream video games on Twitch sometimes back when he was playing, and people kind of get on him because they were like, oh, you should be like doing this, that, and the third for your job. And he's like, I like am not just always playing football. So is that something? Are you just like counting all your coins or you playing some video games? Like what do you do when you're not working?
Yeah, so not a huge video game guy. But yeah, definitely into the coins. There's with the pandemic, the Facebook world has kind of exploded. I don't know what interest you guys have, but whether it's whiskey, coins. I got a little bit into Pokemon cards at the end of the year. We dove in pretty hard, but just small things like that, hanging out on Facebook groups, looking at things, buying coins, trading coins, selling coins, just kind of anything outside of football. Because I mean, it is all day, every day, you know, because it is our profession. It's like towards the end of the season, sometimes you don't want to watch the Monday night football game, even though it's on. You're like, man, unless this, you know, we're playing this team soon or this game has playoff you know, ramifications. I might not turn on the Monday or Thursday night football game and just do something else. Hopefully next year, go out to dinner or do something like that. But yeah, definitely anything to get away from it when we do get free time.
What's the coin collection looking like these days? How
coin collection is doing well.
Things a beast.
I'm excited to get back home because don't keep everything out here, obviously, with me in my apartment. So excited to get back home, go through everything again. Consolidating recently, so selling off a lot of the smaller pieces that, you know, I don't sell anymore or don't collect anymore, or upgrading pieces and trying to have, you know, instead of, you know, 1,000 coins, more 100 coins, but 100 nicer coins. So trying to shrink down the collection, but higher quality.
You got your eye on anything specific?
Yeah. So
you might not want to say, or they'll drive up the price, right?
So yeah, I do. I collect Morgan silver dollars. That's my biggest collection. And there's an 1895 proof Morgan dollar. They only made 880 of them. There's around roughly 400 or 500 left, or around. So that's the big ticket item. Probably not going to pull the trigger on that yet, but that's the one I've got my eye on. If I do end up selling off enough of the collection, I may trade for it if the price is right and if it's available. But that's more of an investment piece. It's all investing, and I do look at it as an investment, but that's like a good chunk of the collection is getting sold off to buy that one. So maybe not yet.
Have you started to venture into the non-fungible token game, those cryptographic collectibles yet or not?
So we had, me and Dudek were into that.
Oh yeah.
We got out of it, which I don't know
why. I know.
We had any money in college, so we got out of it because we needed our money back.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, we were into that. We had the crypto crew.
Group chat still alive to this day.
Still alive. Just was popping off the other day a little bit about how we all sold it. But I mean, we're into Ripple, Cardano. We're big into Litecoin, which Litecoin sucks.
It shot up though for us.
It did at the point. That was honestly probably what we did the best on.
Mm-hmm.
Ethereum's killing me, dude. Like, we're into that too. And that's killing it.
Blowing up.
We never really did much with the Bitcoin because it was so demoralizing buying like a hundredth of a Bitcoin.
Yeah.
We always did the smaller ones.
Right.
I wanted 5,000 of anything I bought. So
yeah.
Not we were buying 25. We had like 25 different coins that we were buying.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know how to get to all that stuff anymore.
My accounts are locked out. There's no way I'm getting to it. I probably have like 500 Bitcoins on one of the accounts.
I was going to say, you're just a sneaky like 9-figure valued person.
I saw a guy that had like 200 and something million
mm-hmm.
in Bitcoin that he couldn't get. And I was like, that's brutal.
I mean, yeah, he's
gone. He is a multi-millionaire and he cannot get it. That kills me.
That's brutal. I feel like, Nikki, you're probably a liability to send out there for the coin toss, don't you think? You might keep your eye on that thing.
So, when I was in college, every single time looked at the coin. I mean, I wasn't out. I mean, you know, they show you, you know, heads, tails. I wanted to see it.
Yeah.
Sometimes they use shitty coins. I'm like, come on, you can't find a better coin than that. But sometimes they were using, you know, some real silver coins that they didn't know much about. But I always asked to take a look at it.
Yeah. See, that's the reason I think I wouldn't send you out there, because you might forget whether you want to receive or want to defer to the second half.
I want the coin. Just give me the coin.
We want the coin.
Yeah.
They're like, sir, that's not an option.
We'll talk after the game.
What's the weirdest, like, not to get too deep into this game, but what's like the weirdest like interaction you've had when you're like trading coins with someone? Have you ever had it get like weirdly heated on like a Facebook group with some rando?
So within the coin collection that I have a gold, I invest in gold and silver as well, kind of to fund the coins as well. It all groups into kind of one for me, but I bought an old gold bar. It was worth a little bit more because of it being a vintage piece rather than just the gold value. But I bought it, you know, posted it on the page and getting a bunch of comments. And then I had a guy reach out to me that I trust a lot. He does a ton of business in the world, in the coin metals world. So he reached out to me, like, hey, I had somebody reach out to me. He just knew we knew each other. So he had some concerns about it. And it's because it's a little bit of an off bar. So it's not because it's older, it's not, you know, 0.9999. So it was a little bit off. And a guy reached out saying, like, hey, here's his concerns, just trying to help. And I was like, yeah, thank you. That helps. So I just went back to my resources. I have a guy that runs the site for these bars. He's like the encyclopedia of these vintage bars. So I went to him, got it verified by him, contacted the guy that I bought it from too, just to let him know that I was, you know, doing research on his bar. I didn't want him to think I was going behind his back. And he didn't get upset, but he's like, that's interesting. He goes, do you mind if I ask who told you? And I, you know, didn't want to tell him, but I eventually told him, you know, who told me. And he's like, that's interesting, because that guy tried to buy the bar from him and was upset that he felt the bar got sold out from under him.
Dang.
So I was like, so this guy tried to like convince me that it was fake.
So then he can swipe it.
Pissed he didn't get it.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that's kind of sketchy. It's weird because, you know, there's in the Facebook world, you have to get a lot of references before you buy from somebody, because it's, I mean, it could be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't buy much from the pages. If I do, I buy from a small group. But it's weird because I see him selling on this page, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if I trust this guy in anything else. Every time he posts something, I want to like comment, but I just let it go. So I let all my sources know what happened, though, so they know to watch out for him. But oh yeah, no, there's an
interesting, that's amazing. You're just like, all right, guys, we got a bad apple. Be on the lookout for him.
If there's proof of it, you are blackballed from anything in that world.
Oh my god! Like,
and there's people that they run scams everywhere in anything, but there's people that have done some shady stuff, and you'll never be allowed anywhere near that world again. So it's fun. I love it.
Sounds intense.
Yeah.
There's one that USPS obviously was struggling throughout COVID, losing packages and stuff, and not their fault, just they were overwhelmed. But there was a case there that a package looked to have been opened, and a gold bar got taken from it. It was a pretty substantial one too. So I had just gotten onto this page, and the whole feed was the two people just like posting live videos, paragraphs, like arguing with each other. And these are both two, like, they're, I mean, you're gonna make fun, they're considered big dogs, they do a lot of business in that world, arguing with each other, and like they both have a lot of backing. But I mean, it was a $10,000-$15,000 bar, you know, deal that somebody got screwed out of. I don't remember who ended up winning. USPS will probably have to cover it, but there's a lot of shit that went back and forth there. Like, oh, you opened the package clearly, like I didn't tape it with that. Oh shit! It was hot. It was heated, man. It was heated.
Would you rather go up against Aaron Donald or a big dog coin collector?
I mean, I'll choose the coin collector. Aaron Donald's about as good as it gets out there. There's some good D linemen, but haven't had to play him yet. But he is probably the best interior guy that I've seen.
Who is your most respected opponent you went against?
So Sue played mostly on the right side. Both times we played him, I got to block him a few times. He's one that he's been around for a long time. So he has that like extra notch that he turns on,
mm-hmm.
but it's not always on. He knows when to turn it on, when to not. Quinn Williams is probably my biggest one I struggled with this year. The big guy out in the Jets. He's just a big human being. So mm-hmm. that was probably the toughest game that I had this year. But it's different because three techs can rush now. And that's the thing that like has changed. You know, I'm a center guard, but I'm playing the guard role. So really having to work on my pass set and all that stuff and use technique and not be just a meathead as I've been for a lot of my career that was definitely a big challenge because, I mean, you've got guys, I mean, like, a, you know, the Aaron Donald has inspired a big generation of players to learn how to rush from the inside. So that's been a big adjustment for sure.
So, yeah, kind of building off of that, Mitchell Schwartz, he goes down with injury. They kick Mike Remmers out. And so you're obviously in the game. Like, this is a mid-game injury. Do you think that that kind of, like, helped you in terms of then knowing next week? Because it was a longer-term injury, obviously, because you started the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. Was it one of those where you were kind of like, oh, shit, I got to go in and I got to play? Or were you just not even thinking because you were just like, all right, I'm just going to go take care of this. And you don't have, like, the entire week to think, oh, man, I'm starting. This is, like, my first career start. I've got so much pressure. Did it kind of help then ease you into that first career start?
So Mitch, his back had been hurting. We knew that. And I remember before the game, I saw him, like, go out to Mike and, like, kind of our lockers were close. And he kind of was, like, whispering to him. And I was like, all right, like, I may be out, maybe not. And then I asked Mike and he's like, hey, just be ready. Mitch didn't want to tell you, not get you nervous, but I think you should just.
But I'm going to tell you anyway.
So, yeah. So,
like, I'm going to get you nervous.
Yeah. So, like, I was ready for it. But then Mitch was like, he started the game. So I was like, all right, it'll probably be good. And then he went down and coach was like, all right, you're up. And I had, it felt like the next drive on defense took forever. I don't know how long it took, but I had about 3 or 4 minutes to, like, warm up before going into the game, which, yeah, I think that was good that I didn't have a whole week of, like, oh shit, you know, like, that definitely helped. Cause I just got thrown in, had to react, watch the film, and it was like there's a lot of stuff that was ugly. I was just kind of playing, reacting, and it was, I think that definitely helped a lot, just clear-headed going in there.
I want to bring it back to the Illini here. What are your thoughts on the new coaching staff thus far? I'm not sure if you've had a chance to interact with them or, you know, have just heard things or seen things, but what's your initial impression with this new staff, Coach Bielema?
Yeah, so, I mean, Coach Bielema, I mean, he was a guy that personally I'm a fan of. You know, he coached Wisconsin, Arkansas, offensive line schools. So I love the way that he's coached teams in the past. So I was excited about it. Don't know how the rest of the world looks at that, but that's an exciting hire to me. You know, a guy that likes O-line, you know, puts a lot of – I mean, playing here with Coach Reed, he's an O-line coach. I've never had that – you know, experience playing for a head coach like that, but it's fun. You know, when someone really cares about, like, the O-line and their importance to the team, I think that's cool. Coach Miller reached out to me a little bit, talked with him, hopefully get out there to visit, but I'm excited for the staff. I think it's, you know, a really good staff. Love Coach Smith, love what he did for myself, for the program, whatever, you know, college, it is what it is. After a certain amount of time, you got to move on. So I'm excited for it. I mean, he knows how to win in the Big Ten. He's done it. He brought a really good staff in around him. Our coach, our D-line coach here, Brendan Daly, was with him in New England for, I think, a year or two and spoke super highly of him. So I'm excited. I mean, I think there's a lot of excitement around the program, around that staff, and people really believe that this is a guy that can come in and win now in the Big Ten.
Have you talked to, I know you and Doug Kramer, Paltrow, you know, V, you talked to any of those guys? Are they pretty pumped up?
Yeah, you know, so they're all super excited about the hire. I mean, mm-hmm. Doug's not a, you know, man of many words, but he's pumped up about it. I feel like there's just a feeling of, after last year, they didn't get the chance to do what they should have done. Mm-hmm. The team was building. They had a ton of experience. They had good players. It was just, it was a tough situation as a program that was looking to have that first, you know, 8-win, 9-win season. It's hard to do that without those first couple games. Mm-hmm. It's when you become right. The team that you are. And without that, that was tough. So, Doug, I think they're really excited to get that chance to go have a full season, hopefully play out their senior year. I think they still do have plenty of leadership with some good transfers they've gotten in, mm-hmm. which has been exciting to see. I think, I don't know how recruiting's gone with the new staff, but they're all excited for this upcoming year.
feel like Brett Bielema would love to have a like five Nick Allegretti's on his team as he's coming in. You would definitely be the perfect kind of dude for what he's looking for. And it kind of that's like one of those things where it sucks that, I mean, obviously it's going to be great that Kendrick Green's probably going to go make a bunch of money, but if he was coming back, that old line would be just primed and ready to go for, because they're definitely going to look to run the football.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously losing KG's tough. He was, you know, pretty substantial part of that team. Think he's going to do really well. I'm excited for that because I don't think anyone understands how well he's going to test.
Oh, he's a freak.
I say, like, people have seen his squad. He's crazy, but like the athletic ability he's got is pretty cool. So I'm excited for him. It would be crazy to see him back on that O-line. I mean, even without him still, not many O-lines going to have more starts than that. Interested to see. I don't even know what the projected depth charts are. Potentially, Verdish is back. Julian, honestly, I was pretty happy with the way that he stepped in. A guy that made a pretty quick transition since I've left. And then I think Blake, the transfer from Wofford, I believe. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
He was a really good player there, so I'm excited to see him transfer over as well. So definitely can fill those spots and run the rock this year. So that's exciting.
Looking back on your career in the orange and blue, do you have a favorite memory or one or two that stick out?
Other than living with me.
I was about to throw that out and just hype you up. I was saying, living with Crouch and Dudek. Just kind of the team, really, honestly. Just not even to just answer what I just did, but I did love the team there. We did have a close team. And I don't know, the college, each locker room changes. High school, college, NFL. We do have a pretty close locker room now, but it's different. You know, it's a lot of fathers and husbands and guys that are 35 years old. And college locker room is pretty cool. You know, there's first time that most of us are living on our own, get to kind of do whatever we want. So just kind of that locker room, a lot of pride with the people that, you know, I played with. And I don't know, it's fun. We, you know, even though we didn't have the success that we wanted to while we're there, I think we're all still proud of, you know, what we did to help the program get to where it's at. I think there's still a lot of people that are playing there that were influenced by, you know, the guys that me and Dudek played with, you know. So I think that's probably just the best memory. You know, there's definitely a lot of pride of playing for that team.
Not to shoehorn myself into this whole game we got going here, but I actually know Nikki from, we had a class together, and I'm sure right now you're after two Super Bowl appearances and you know, going to enjoy your off season while I'm in the middle of busy season working like wee hours of the night. You're definitely regretting not going into public accounting, I'm sure.
My fiance is in a tax consultant. She's an engineer, but she's working at Deloitte. My brother and my sister-in-law are at Deloitte. But my father's moved on from Deloitte. But no, I don't envy you. that was the life that I thought I was going to be living. Was signed up for that for 23 years. So
lucky you. That's awesome.
Don't hope to have to be there soon. Probably the world I'm going to eventually enter, because I do. I am a nerd. I love it. Hopefully, maybe a different area within the finance world. Yeah. But we'll see. I've been reading some real estate books recently, so
respect.
Me and Dudek are gonna get on that until we become start on our own real estate company soon.
Yeah. We'll have Jay be our designer.
Exactly. Me and Dudek and Crouch, we've got about 15 companies. We just haven't just launched them yet.
They just haven't started yet, but they're there.
The thoughts and the ideas are all laid out. We just have to send one of them.
Your group chat's called like Silicon Valley or something.
I wish.
But yeah, one of the things that I remember, we had like a couple conversations, and I remember asking about you and Kendrick like wrestling before games or whatnot, or like, is that something, you know, in a non-COVID world, whatever team he ends up on, you're going to try and get after that in like a little pregame ritual?
I mean, if he ended up on the Chiefs, we would wrestle in the locker room. But
that would be sick.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, we did it at Illinois. I know I'm a little rusty, and, you know, body continues to get banged up, but there's no possibility of me losing that. I'd love for you to just quote that and send it to him.
I mean, we're going to probably have him on the podcast at some point, so we'll have to plan this audio.
I'll jump in when he's on. Love Kendrick, great football player, terrible wrestler. Have no respect for his wrestling ability.
All right, that's the clip right there. Just put that.
Right. Mickey, I remember, I'll probably never forget this the rest of my life. We were freshmen going in, and Rob Bain.
Yeah.
When I was in high school, I was a sophomore. He was a senior at Bolingbrook. I played against him, and I was like, this is the scariest human being I've ever seen. Just a complete monster, beast. He goes to Illinois. 2 years later, I'm at Illinois, and I'm just getting to know everybody, you know, living with Nikki. And we go in the locker room, and there's like little wrestling matches going on. I believe you called out Bane, or somehow you and Bane got matched up.
I'm blanking right now. It was – why can't I remember his name? Linebacker with dreads. He's a JUCO coach now.
Oh.
He shaved it, but
– dang, yeah.
Why am I blanking on his name?
We'll get back to it.
But you know
– Daniel, up to insert.
I'm going to dub it in there.
His face right now.
Goofy guy that like was Bane's – he was like his manager.
His hype man.
Like he just hyped Bane up everywhere he went.
Yeah.
Eric Finney.
So yeah, I did. I did wrestle Bane, and I have to give him the nod on that one.
No, see, I think you were tossing him around. That's why I was like, okay, like
this dude's a stud.
I'm like, Nicky's a savage. I'm like,
I'm gonna say, had we really wrestled, yeah, I would have beat him. But he did beat me earlier in my career when I was younger. So I mean, I gotta give him that. But no, that was, I'll tell you what I mean. I love wrestling in the locker room. That was one of the most fun things of, I remember wrestled Carroll Phillips one time.
Oh gosh.
How'd that go? That was
wild, man.
He went fine, but Wild Man was strong as anyone I've ever played against. Just natural strength. The guy that couldn't squat until it got to like 315 because he just was too strong and stiff. And he's like, I need to put some weight on so I can get lower. Was just one of those guys, just naturally a freak.
That's probably not something you get in the pro locker room as well. It's probably another differentiator in terms of like you having that college vibe of, oh yeah, we can just mess around and wrestle each other in the locker room. Whereas in the pros, guys are like, oh yeah, like let's get out of here because it is like a job and they got families.
We had a basketball hoop in the locker room at one point. That got removed probably because of COVID or.
Well, and Mahomes' contract. I'm pretty sure he like can't play basketball. So is that technically against the rules?
But really? Those guys,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he like can't do a bunch of different things in his contract. Like he can't like ski or play basketball or some other stuff.
I did see that, which is.
But for $500 mil,
I mean,
that because that he's a guy that he just is addicted to sports, so that's tough for him. But yeah, we just guys in the locker room, Tyreek. They love sports. So anything that we think of, if there was a soccer ball in the locker room, like they'll just turn it into a sport somehow. Because we do have a big open patch right in the middle. And they just compete about everything. They're those guys that like you meet that the guy that's like really good at beer pong and really good at bags and really good at ping pong. And just everything they pick up, they're good at. That's how Pat, Trav, those guys are. They're just. They probably would have gone pro in another sport, another two, if they decided to. They just chose football.
We'll give you one more chance to expose Mikey on his own show here. You think of that story yet? You want to drop any knowledge on people?
Yeah, back when he had long hair, you had to hold it after a long night back in the day.
I was going to say, I mean, there's just such a fine line of what can be brought up and what can't.
Yeah, we'll have to have you back on.
I'll just throw you prepared. I'll just throw a good memory out just because I want to.
Okay,
not really
nervous.
An embarrassing moment by any means. But I just, you know, COVID, haven't been out often or recently, haven't seen Dudek in a while. So just one good memory posted up at Lion.
Mm.
Sitting at the back bar for about 4 hours. Just a good, nothing embarrassing there, but Dudek knows that was a good one.
That was one of my favorite nights of college. We weren't even planning on going out. It was just
had zero ability to go out. No, yeah, we just went there and just turned into a great fucking night.
It was so much. Yep.
That's it.
We'll cut the story there.
There's just, I was going to say. And that's where it ends.
Oh, man.
Well, Nikki, we appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's always great to catch up with a former Illini and successful NFL pro. So best of luck to you, and thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun jumping on with you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of The Field Pass. If you like this interview and want to hear more like it, please feel free to subscribe, leave us a 5-star review. You can follow us on social media. We're at The Field Pass on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And feel free to send us a message too if you have anyone that you'd like to hear us interview. We'll do our best to reach out. Thanks, and go Illini.